the following contains strong language and adult content. We tried to tell our hosts that they'll be talking about manga targeted at Japanese teenage boys, but they demanded access to what they call fuck words. So, here we are. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome everyone to the Shonen Fiasco Show, the number one book club for the self-loathing weeb. I am your... I need to do better about planning for this part, host, Adam Tetramore.
And I am the, I planned it in the 10 minutes it took us to fix the audio issues, host, it's Alex Hill.
So impressive, so professional, Alex Hill.
Oh my god.
Oh, wow. Oh, you spend 10 minutes thinking this out in your free time. Such efficiency. Wow. You should be the host, not me. You just get two Alex Hills.
That's too much. That's too much for the world.
Listen, you're punching down on me right now because this has been rough for me. You want to know why?
Why so?
I hate to announce this in this platform in this way. It's honestly humiliating on my own podcast to admit this.
I'm scared.
I will have to concede the 2020 election to now President-elect Joe Biden. He ran a good campaign, and I know a lot of people are disappointed. I don't like losing, and every 4 years I lose this freaking thing, like every time, and I don't know what to do about that.
I'm so lost. What do you mean?
I lost the election, Alex. I lost the freaking election. I tried so freaking hard every 4 years, every state election that I am eligible to be a part of, I lose those elections. I am the worst politician on the planet, and I don't know how to, like, I don't have enough copium. All the copium's been taken up by the other losers. I don't know the other guy's name, but I thought I had it this time. What happened?
Well, you must be in the right podcast because this is the one for all the ones that didn't make it.
I guess so. I feel so much empathy for those that can't get past the finish line and, like, try their best to, you know, be president as all mangakas want to be, as we all know.
Yeah, when I hear president in manga, I get immediately scared because I think about a certain part of JoJo.
I mean, that's what I want to be is the kind of president that comes in with a stand, beautiful hair, and full pink attire, just thwarting the plans of horse-riding teenagers. Like, that's all I wanted to be. And I ran on that platform, and I still, like, I don't know. I don't know what it is. So, I don't know. I just want to win something in my life. Alex, aren't you pissed, too? You lost the election, too.
I didn't even know I was running.
You got more votes than me is the thing, and you're telling me you didn't know you were campaigning. So that's kind of frustrating. If you want to check CNN, there's like three for you, and I didn't even vote for myself. I forgot how to operate the, like, okay, I took the election quiz, and I felt like I didn't know the answers that well, so I had to kind of look beside me and cheat off the other person. No joke. That's at the very least what I told the Trump War Room hotline.
Really?
A couple days ago. Oh, yeah. I told them I was going to report voter fraud because I cheated off the other person on the test and I just copied what they did. And I had a guilty conscience and I wanted to report it to Rudy Giuliani.
Oh, my gosh. I love it. Like, I've heard that line has been pranked to high hell. And I would love to get those recordings. I mean, I love like phone call stuff, phone call pranks, things of that nature. Like, I used to get a whole lot of sales calls and stuff. And my favorite one of all time was I got someone trying to sell me something. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. And I was like, well, hold on 1 second. And I put the phone down. Here's the thing. I was in orchestra rehearsal. So I put the phone on my stand and we continue orchestra rehearsal. And I just let the dude, he sat there for 20 minutes listening to this orchestra rehearsal. Before he hung up.
And he probably thought it was like hold music. Just like, oh, wow, orchestral hold music. That's pretty neat.
I mean, I would think so. But, like, you know, we stop a whole lot to, like, you know, a section. And you hear the conductor be like, floats, you know, get your shit together. And, you know, just like stuff going on. And I just wondered what the guy thought. Like, at what point was he like, oh, he's fucking with me.
Do you have anything else going on outside of election stuff? Or, like, is that your life? Because it was my life. I need what else you got going on?
I tell you what, election stuff was my life. I was stressed beyond belief the whole week. And then the weekend came and I got a release of serotonin and got to breathe, you know, a sigh of relief. And then I got in VR and I was in VR pretty much from Friday through Sunday night. Just straight, just about.
See, I thought the whole point of VR was like escapism. It's just, oh, yes, the world's good again. Time to run the fuck back to VR and go back to the fantasy world.
Well, I mean, it was sort of like a big party. So, you know, fair. Since we can't party IRL, my that became the party place. So we got it hyped for the news we heard Friday. And then it was just everyone into VR and have a good time and just like chill.
Did you get to party in the infamous VR Four Seasons landscaping parking lot?
Now, I did not, but it is really funny. It cracks me up that became a thing because I know who made it. I know the
really,
yeah. I know who made it. I know the guy who you know whose avatar is in it and everything. And I remember seeing it like before the news picked it up, just on Twitter and just you know hearing friends talk about it. People that I know who were there. And I was just like, oh, that's funny, you know, that, you know, for those who don't know that the Trump administration tried to schedule a place for their, you know, press conference for the election, but ended up scheduling, what was it, like a parking, like a landscape parking lot or something like that?
It was the Four Seasons Landscaping Company. And this story's been told so many times, but you know what? Even in your Shonen pop culture podcast, I need to tell this story because, God, it's a great story of just this last dying press conference of the Trump administration being held in like a rinky-dink parking lot next to an adult porn store. And like, and we just, that's life. Like, that's the world we live in, and we live in this timeline.
It's so funny.
I like the season finale of 2020. It's a good twist to what has overall been a pretty hard watch.
Would you, as Shonen Jump, renew or cancel 2020 the manga?
No, I wouldn't renew this. Nope. No.
I look at it and be like, this is the darkest manga. Who wrote this? Why did you write this?
Here's the thing. If I am the editor for Shonen Jump and the creator of 2020 the manga were to show up, I would try to cancel it. But for some reason, even with my powers, they'd be like, it's already printed. So I pray to him and sacrifice what goats I have to sacrifice in order to avoid a fate in which this dark entity would ever have any stake in Japanese boys' manga.
Well, to make sure we don't have a renewal of 2020 the manga, maybe we might need some sort of warden to help us drag that manga back to Shonen Fiasco Hell.
Yeah, some sort of hell warden, you mean. Some sort of, yeah, your lead-in could use some work, but I see where you're getting at, because what you're trying to get me to do is to say that we are a podcast focused on manga and Shonen Jump that only reach 50 chapters or less. I guess we can go ahead and get to the pitch. Higuma Kagarite is like any other high school student, except for one thing. His family has been charged by King Enma of Hell himself to act as his Hell Wardens and return escaped evil souls to Hell. With his supernatural abilities, Higuma vows to protect the denizens of the mortal realm and to send the demons back to Hell where they belong. From the mind of Natsuki Hokami, this is Hell Warden Higuma. There was not a lot of ways to diversify I felt like I was saying three sentences of some guy sends things to hell.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Pretty straightforward, I guess. He kills things dead and they go to hell. All right.
This pitch and this blurb very much is something that if you came to me and was just like, what if King Enma, you know, came and he said, I need people to go to hell. So a guy sends things to hell. I'm like, all right, well, I don't know if I'm jumping out of my fucking seat, so.
Yeah. I know that the saying goes, never judge a book by its cover, but when we first said that we were going to read this one, and I just looked at the blurb, and I looked at the, like, the art and what it would be, I wasn't sure. I was just like, I'm probably not going to like this one.
It's not something that you would usually read.
Yeah, just right off the bat, it wouldn't be something, like, if I were at a manga store and I pulled this out, I would have looked at it front and back and be like, huh. And then put it back.
Helluarden Higuma, or Gokutei Higuma, ran in Weekly Shonen Jump from December of 2018 to May of 2019. The series ran for 19 chapters and 3 volumes, all of which can be found on the Shonen Jump app. The series initially came to life in 2017 as a short series in the seasonal Shueisha publication Jump Giga under the name Higuma no Tei, before being workshopped and republished for a weekly run. Helluarden Higuma is the Weekly Jump debut of mangaka Natsuki Hokami, who has yet to reappear in Jump or any other publication since.
Oh man, I hope he does.
I hope that Natsuki Hokami is still doing stuff, but...
Yeah, I mean, hopefully I would like to think that, like, you know, it came to life in 2017 and didn't really get to Jump to 2018. And hopefully that means he probably was working on it a lot in 2016. So maybe, you know, since it's only been 2 years since the release, a little over a year after its cancellation, maybe he's still working on something, but...
Not exactly a prolific author and not exactly a series that has a lot in the way of... behind the scenes material. So it's going to be hard to really say like what the thought process is for why Okami Sensei came up with some of the ideas or whatnot, but I think we could speculate on a few things.
Oh, absolutely.
I think we can see the series as a symptom of changing ideas of what an action shonen needs to be from the kind of extreme masculine himbo energy. And we talk about himbos a lot because they appear a lot in Shonen Jump series. But I think we're going to talk a little bit and we'll go into more depth about how the protagonist has changed in someone that's a little more nuanced, a little more sensitive right out of the gate, has a bit of emotional maturity, or at least a desire to seek out emotional maturity that did not used to be any kind of prerequisite for any kind of protagonist. And I think a lot of that has to do with Demon Slayer.
Yeah, which... yeah, that was going to be the number one thing I would mention there, is the effect that Demon Slayer had alone on Shonen Jump and why we would see manga like this that came slightly after it. This will be something I think will hit throughout the series because it's a pretty easy comparison. But I think it's also very important, just like we talked about how Zombie Powder was a reflection of that time period of Shonen Jump. I think this manga will also go to show what was expected, what was popular during this period of Shonen Jump.
And that starts with our opening chapters, 1-2. The series begins the way many good stories do, with an inebriated man harassing bystanders on a bus. A high school girl by the name of Ayaha Kurumine looks on disdainfully as a drunkard demands the seat of a quiet young man known as Higuma Kagarite. Higuma, laughing off the situation, kindly and submissively gives in to the drunkard's demands. This doesn't sit right with Ayaha, however, who attempts to confront the drunkard for his rudeness. But Higuma de-escalates the situation by dragging the girl along with him off the bus, though she doesn't actually see whatever it is that is pulling her wrist, strangely enough. One thing I like about the series is it's short, but it's consistent in terms of what the themes are. Character-wise, we have yes. Our protagonist, Higuma Kagarite, who is just a beta, you know, like I don't think he's beta, but I think he is very much non-confrontational. And that is already something that's very distinct from him outside of, you know, I think you look at Bleach and One Piece and Hunter x Hunter, and you look at confrontational characters. You're looking at characters that have a strong will and a strong desire to not so much trying to provoke people, but isn't afraid to speak their mind. And right out of the gate, you have a protagonist that is kind of the opposite end of the spectrum that's like, eh, I'll let things slide. I don't really care, whatever. And that's run into contrast to our female side character, who is very much confrontational.
Right.
The dynamic is often reversed when it comes to male protagonist and female side character. where the female side character is the one that's like trying to bring everyone back and like the holding back the bro so that they don't wreck shit.
Yeah.
Having a female character that is, as the series describes, very intent on following through what she views as just and right, right out of the gate, makes this, in terms of character dynamics, very interesting.
Absolutely. Spreading out some of those qualities, I think, is really nice. Something I very much enjoy. I think of Katana Gatari with this kind of aspect, where the main character, Swordsman, he's kind of like doing his own thing, but it's the girl who's, you know, she's side character, but I guess one of the main characters in this particular example, and she's very headstrong. She's into her own stuff with her own ideas and agenda, and I very much like that with characters. And in this one, I kind of got like the Mob Psycho kind of thing, the kind of like, I'm a good boy, but maybe a sad boy due to trauma, but you don't know yet.
I think bringing up Mob Psycho is a good point in terms of having a protagonist that is very passive and very much non-confrontational. But I think the big difference is Higuma has a bit more confidence about it.
Yes,
it's like he doesn't really need to be confronting people. He's fine. He's, you know, like, bygones be bygones. And
that makes sense, because we will learn that the traumas associated with Higuma versus Mob are different. So the root of their personality and the root of their issues of where they stand in the world are going to be a little bit different.
The two characters banter with each other at the bus stop for a bit, with Higuma shrugging off the entire situation as Ayaha expresses frustration over suddenly getting off on a random stop. Higuma explains that she is indeed at the right stop as he points to the wallet in her hand, a wallet that belongs to the drunkard on the bus. A flustered Ayaha tries to explain herself, but Higuma already knows what the issue is. Ayaha is on her way to a notorious Shinto shrine to receive an exorcism, a shrine that Higuma just so happens to call home. In the living room of the temple, Ayaha explains that she's been stealing various things without being conscious of it for months. Doctors and counselors have been unable to help, so now she's desperate enough to see an exorcist. After hearing her story, Higuma wastes no time in ramming his hand through the young girl's forehead. The hand, having seemingly phased through Ayaha, comes out the other side holding a skeletal monstrosity known as a Tsuduma. As Higuma crushes the low-level spirit to dust, Ayaha looks on in shock as she's suddenly able to see an assortment of incorporeal hands known as Zaiju floating around Higuma.
This is really cool. This is a really good way to set up right at the beginning, to where, you know, it shows exactly what things are possible, even on a very base level in this world, and what is accepted as real in this world. And that is, like, spirits and explaining certain things as bad behaviors or things that in Japanese society you would not want to do whatsoever, have a physical manifestation behind some of it.
Just seeing a bunch of floating ghost hands around and, like, pouring tea and helping out. It's a superpower that is distinct, but is also like, I would like that superpower. That's kind of cool.
I would get so much shit done.
I think as you get older, you're like, I could use some more hands just to help me out in life. I don't know if that's appealing to a younger audience. Like, I'm sure they're all about, I want to be rubber. I want to control my chakra. Like, no, dude, just give me more,
like, hands.
Incorporeal hands to act as my servants. And that's like the king's superpower for me. I don't give a shit. Higuma explains that what he just pulled out of her body was a fugitive spirit that escaped from hell. Information that Ayaha takes pretty well, considering. Higuma then offers to send Ayaha home via spooky-ooky supernatural teleportation, and invites her to return to the shrine if she ever needs help again.
Spooky-ooky from a spooky-ooky pumpkin.
Yeah, we're just like, we don't want to do a transitional scene where she has to go back home, so we got teleportation, from a spooky cauldron. with a face.
Yeah.
So yeah.
It's kind of cute, though.
Ayaha, upon suddenly appearing in her bedroom, thinks on how odd the last few minutes have been.
Yeah.
But that introspection is interrupted when Ayaha's brother enters the room. The cold-eyed sibling asks Ayaha where she's been, to which she replies by asserting that she's been in her room the whole time. Unhappy with the answer, the brother grabs Ayaha by the throat and threatens to kill her if she ever lies to him again. We learn that several months ago, Ayaha's brother, a once kind and thoughtful fellow, became increasingly violent and callous to his family for whatever reason. With her new insight on the existence of spirits and possession, Aiha is quick to put the dots together and asks point blank if her brother is a dead spirit. It's bold.
That's ballsy.
It's like, you ghost possessing my brother, you evil, life-threatening spirit. Like, if that person isn't a spirit, and that's still your brother, you're still going to get killed for that. Like, what a shitty thing yeah. I would be pretty pissed if I was someone that is prone to be pissed. So
you know, it's like on one side you have my brother just may be a psychopath and might just kill me, or he may have a spirit inside him and he might just kill me.
But here's the thing. I am a bigger fan of Aiha being smart enough as a character to immediately connect the dots. She has learned about spirits and possession and how it's a real thing.
Yeah.
And for months, she's been like, I don't know why my brother is this totally different person. It doesn't make sense. And she immediately is like, wait a second. She's kind of dumb for immediately asking about that. But I do like that we don't have to have that period of, oh, my brother, I'm so worried about him. And then, like, the protagonist comes in and explains, like, no, you dumb broad, it's possession. I told you about this.
That's way better than, like, sticking people in a room and be like, all right, look out for anything suspicious. There might be a stand user here, and everyone's, you know, just chilling out in their hoodies and sweatshirts, and there's one dude in spandex and a hat posing in the corner.
The spirit, recognizing the jig is up, immediately drops the mask as sharp black cords start pouring out of the boy's mouth and body. With certain death approaching her, Aiha stands her ground and demands the demon get out of her brother's body. But just before she's struck down, Aiha is saved by the sudden appearance of Higuma, who jumps out of the window while holding on to his client and lands on a pair of massive Zaiju hands. Higuma explains that Aiha's brother has been possessed by a much stronger and much more intelligent spirit than the Tsudama from before, with a sentence of 117 years in hell. Fueled by Aiha's furious cries for her brother to be saved, Higuma then transforms into his work uniform, a traditional Japanese police uniform with horns sticking out of the cap and a flame design lining the bottom of the coat like a race car, honestly. Overall, it's a cool design, when describing it, it does feel like, oh, I'm going to put flames on it because I want to go faster as a hell police.
I didn't think about it until I read the synopsis. I was like, damn it, that's exactly what it is.
The Black Court spirit immediately realizes that he is fucked up, as he recognizes the uniform as that of a Hell Warden. Mortals with immense supernatural power tasked with hunting down any spirit that escapes from Hell. We get a demonstration of these powers, as Higuma replaces his own hands with a pair of Zaiju holding swords, which he uses to slash the Black Cords and exorcise the spirit to great effect. Even when the spirit cries out to Aiha for help, Higuma is merciless as he eviscerates the fugitive, sending it back to hell and saving the day. That's what's cool about this is that kind of Mega Man power system that we talked about with Zip Man, where you could like replace your hands and you get different powers or different weapons.
I love that kind of stuff.
The following day, Higuma decides to take Aiha to a proper Hell Warden mission, purely for shiggles. Because in this encounter, we learn that the teleportation MacGuffin is actually a sentient cauldron named Roku. We meet some scouts that work under Higuma, known as the Bunraisha. And the Hellworn demonstrates the Black Core powers that he acquired from yesterday's battle in a quick showdown against a fire spirit. Showing more of the Mega Man stuff, for stealing powers and then appropriating them and using them to fight other demons. That's the power gimmick, and it's very cool and aesthetic and... Yeah. The opening chapters conclude with Higuma assuring a troubled Aiha that her brother's hands are cleaned of the crimes his spirit committed and that one day he'll learn to forgive himself. And those are the opening chapters. We pretty much have to explore our two main characters and our cool powers. And we do that, but it's done so in a way that's maybe a little too... formulaic, like a little too posting pins on a pin board and connecting lines. And, you know, I guess at the end of the day, I'm still like, that's cool. And I also like the characters so far in terms of how they approach their issues and what concerns them and what their anxieties are. I just have doubts about a few fundamental things.
That's pretty much where I fell into with this one. But what does stand out is the power system, the power mechanics for this world, and some of the battle scene art was really, really cool and really well described. So, you know, I'm left being interested personality-wise in both of these characters. I'm interested in the battle mechanics and where that can lead to, but I'm still unsure of the whole Hell Warden part of Hell Warden. And so, you know, at that part, I was just like, I'm interested enough to keep going, but I feel like it was on a teeter-totter. It was, you know, it could go either way.
And that leads us to the first proper arc of the series, chapters 3-6, the Diamond Raven arc. In this relatively straightforward arc, we're introduced to a side character from the Bunraysha named Kobata, who acts as a source of exposition for the Bunraysha because, hey, guess what? Ayaha is now a Bunraysha, as deemed by Great King Enma. More on him later. But for now, we're going to talk about Kobata, who is as vanilla-paced side character as he can be. We don't even see his face. Like, he has the kind of Pokemon grunt aesthetic with his eyes being hidden by his hoodie. And yeah, we're, like, getting conversation exposition from him. And all I'm thinking is, like, who the hell are you?
He's the most forgettable character in this manga.
One other bias I have, I think, against Kobata is being a part of the Bunraysha, which is probably my least favorite aspect of this world.
Yeah.
Is there are just guys that they could see spirits and they kind of help out. They're like support. When we learn in this arc what drives Kobata to be a Bunraysha, it's like, oh, because fucking Higuma's cool. Like, I just think he's a cool guy. I'm like, okay.
It's like if a Demon Slayer, it's like there was a position you had to try out for or something. And it's like, you're not a Demon Slayer. You're a Slayer helper. And yeah.
Because I know it's simple to think about, but at the end of the day, this is shonen. This is for young readers.
Right.
And I think an important part in building a cool world and an interesting dynamic is having every single character be something that a young boy would like to become. Right. Mm-hmm. And they crush that with Higuma. He has cool powers. Yeah. He's, you know, he's interesting to look at and whatnot. But then every other character is just like a goon. And yeah, I don't think 13-year-old Adam Tetramori is about to pop off like, oh, I want to be one of the goons. Like, no.
Yeah, no.
Like, could you imagine if, like, One Piece had Zoro and Zoro's just, like, a guy that's just like, I'm here to help Luffy. He's awesome. No, Zoro's awesome because he's fucking a swordsman that has amazing abilities and
stand alone.
Is strong in his own right and can stand alone. He doesn't have to be a stand for anybody. Meanwhile, Higuma takes on a harpy-looking spirit known as the Kongo Shiru Diamond Raven, who has been herding old people together at night in order to drain their life force. What a dick. Also, life force is a thing, and it acts as the most important and sought-after resource for fugitive spirits. Basically, you escape from hell, and you still got to figure out how to live, and life force is how you live, so you have to just steal life gunk from people, and that's what makes these fugitive spirits so despicable, is that they keep stealing our life force.
Keep stealing our time, our life.
My life juice. My Capri Sun!
And speaking of stealing Capri Sun, I can't help but laugh when this villain is introduced and he flies in and, you know, trying to find our main characters here. And he goes, I can smell you. I just think of that Seedainer's video of them playing prop hunt and they're acting like Morgan Freeman running around trying to figure out who's the prop hiding and just, I can smell you.
I can smell you.
It just, yeah, I smell laugh of out a loud. Liar.
After catching the spirit showering down on old people juice, Higuma dismantles the raven spirit with ease. But it takes a pause when the fugitive begins to beg for mercy. The spirit feels guilty for consuming the life force of humans, resorting only to the elderly who have already lived full lives. But in order to avoid returning to hell, the spirit had no choice. Higuma empathizes with the spirit's desperation, but stands firm on his belief that robbing the life of others and using them as currency is unacceptable, and finishes off the spirit by unleashing a pair of swords known as Hellblades. The arc ends sometime after the fight at a mysterious foggy bank of water, as we see Higuma getting his ass handed to him by a masked man who we can assume is his trainer. The teacher chastises his pupil throughout the exchange for showing too much restraint and weakness. Once his training is over, a pair of Zaiju grab Higuma by the ankles and drag him to the head honcho of hell himself, Great King Enma. depicted in this series as a mischievous-looking young boy. Alex, how much do you know about Great King Enma in terms of just general lore?
I don't know a whole lot, and I will have to say I fucked up a little bit, because this entire time that I read this manga, I read it as Great King Enma, and that is something entirely different, and I messed up. And
that's now a different king. That's a different lord of hell.
And now I have to untrain that so I don't say that, like, in all seriousness when I talk about this later.
Yeah, that shows that you are more... God, I might cut this joke. Please forgive me. But, like, that shows that you're more a gay man than Chinese literature philosopher. I might cut that, but man, I like that joke. I hate to call you out like that, but fuck.
Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah, so Great King Enma is basically one of those Chinese folklore figures that was appropriated into Japanese culture and has been depicted like 1,000 times. In Dragon Ball, he's the guy at the front desk of the afterlife.
He's the big red dude.
Yeah, they pretty much are just like, that's Great King Enma. He's been always depicted as like an office clerk that's like, you know, trying to figure out who needs to go where.
But this one, the office clerk rise up. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. We actually get our first look of like what hell is, and it's fine. I don't know. You have so many cool designs, and the best thing you could do for hell is a foggy bank with a bridge.
Yeah. I expected a little bit more. Like, I don't know. When you think of hell, you want to call the manga Hell Warden. Like, you really gotta sell it. This is a place that you lock up all the demons and all the nasty and everything and just, like, reflect it, you know? Or at least show us if this is, like, the chill area. This is, like, the meeting room, you know, the nice little pond, you know, misty, whatever. At least show us a glimpse of the nasty, the nitty-gritty.
You have an opportunity to depict hell in an interesting way, you know, run with it. Like, look at Chainsaw Man. I know you haven't read Chainsaw Man, but Chainsaw Man has one of the coolest depictions of hell ever. And y'all need to, like, pick up your idea of what hell can be. It can't be boring. It needs to be creepy or restrictive or something clever. I still like the characters. I still like the action aesthetic. But the overall world building here is bland.
While there are some interesting things in this arc where we get the demon just basically talking about his justification for things, even though he sort of like goes back on it immediately when he tries to flee, that kind of thing where it's like, oh, is there something more going on with our enemies in this? Like, you know, are we supposed to start feeling for them? Is this sort of like a sin Final Fantasy X kind of thing?
You do bring up a good point because it gets discussed more in the next arc, but this arc gives us a hint at there's something more to these spirits than just they come to hell and they wreak havoc. There's something about them that is much more complex. We get a sliver of that in this arc. They expound on that in the next arc, and I think it is the strongest element of the series. So yes, I'm excited to get to that,
very much so.
As we get into the Iron Fox arc, chapters 7 through 11, Higuma sternly asks Enma to stop turning his friends into Bunraisha, a request that essentially goes ignored, as Enma warns the Hell Warden of the next enemy to come. A kitsune who has been sentenced to 328 years in hell, named Nairi no Kotetsu, Iron Fox. We even get a glimpse of the spirit's cruelty when she forces a mother to kill her entire family.
Do you think the demon that was sentenced to 69 years in hell, do you think he's the most powerful one?
I think that's the goal, is to do just enough to get to 69 and then tell King Enma nice.
Nice.
The next day, we get a glimpse of Higuma's high school life through the perspective of a sweet young girl by the name of Akane, who seems to have a bit of a crush on our protagonist. She's a kind girl with a loving family and a little sister who will be born in a few days, and it would be terrible if she were to be possessed by a malevolent kitsune spirit.
Oh no!
Poor Akane, just going about being a perfectly fine pedestrian.
It is really funny though that literally she's like, wow, my life is great. I love everything. And I have a mom and a sister and a baby on the way.
here's the thing. What would have blown my mind if we had this chapter of just like this girl's perspective of like, things are great. I love my mom and I like this boy and it's great and I'm having a great time. And then we never see her again. That whole fucking arc was just there in a vacuum. We go back to like action shonen. Like, who the fuck was that?
Yeah. Just never gets explained again.
Higuma eventually gets a call during class from a distant relative and fellow Hell Warden named Itomi, who tells him that the Kitsune seems to be targeting him in particular, and that he should keep an eye out for any girls close to him who are potential targets, because it would be terrible if a classmate were to be possessed by a malevolent Kitsune spirit. Higuma leaves the classroom to track down the absent Akane, and is furious to find that she's been possessed by a malevolent Kitsune spirit.
What?
Aw, oh, man. What did I say? I said it'd be terrible. Dang it.
Dang, it happened. Ah, that's not what's supposed to happen.
Ah, beans. The two fight it out in a drawn-out battle that forces Higuma to use every trick in the book, including relying on Ayaha and Kobata to provide a much-needed decoy. Again,
he absolutely used them as bait.
I hate how good Ayaha is a character. Like, Ayaha as a character is great, and they just put her in the fucking stand pit. Like, ugh! The whole point at first is to have her come off as a distinct female side character that has autonomy and ability to confront things and whatnot. And so far, after that first chapter, she's just there.
Give her, like, the Nezuko treatment in Demon Slayer. Like, give her something.
Don't blame anyone for saying Ayaha is just a generic girl character in manga, but like her first chapter is like so strong for me that I'm like, no, she's a great character. She's just being put into this shitty fucking troop. I fucking hate these Boomerasha. I don't know why I have such passionate hate for this small plot detail. It's such a superfluous hate, but it's ruining my girl.
Yeah, she has a lot of potential, and then it gets delegated to the B team. It's like, eh, that sucks.
As Higuma finally corners his enemy, the distraught spirit, like many of the villains up to this point, desperately cries out. She rants about her original life in the mortal realm, when she was a mother who was incapable of loving her child, and the pain of being unable to empathize with those who loved their child unconditionally. To her, slaughtering families and their relationships along with them is an act of freedom that inspires happiness, regardless of the self-loathing that comes with that happiness. This is where we're getting into the kind of juicy main theme of Hellwarden Higuma, which is dealing justice and exacting retribution from people who are just pathetic. This is where I'm like, there's potential here. They hate this. They hate being fugitive spirits. And yeah, they messed up and they made bad decisions. And we have to kind of ask ourselves, like, you know, what's the role of forgiveness? What's the role of justice? Da, 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 da.
This was a thread that really got me interested in it. And while I do have some issues overall with some of the material, I did like this aspect of it.
As he strikes his finishing blow, Higuma chides the fugitive, telling her that he has no empathy for the sinner. However, his words are betrayed by emotions as a tear falls from his face, mirroring the tear of the defeated spirit. That's where we're getting into the protagonist. Mm-hmm. We are not dealing with somebody that is so emotionally cut off that they see someone as pathetic as a villain of this nature and says, like, it doesn't matter. You're fucking, you blew it. You suck and you're done. He has to play that role in order to do his job. But deep down, he's like, fuck, I hate this. Ooh, like, no. I understand. I do empathize. And the way that we kind of learn this is interesting, and in where he gives a spiel about, I have no empathy for you. You are a merciless killer. You have nowhere to go but hell. And we see a tear come down his eye. And then we get taken to a flashback of the trainer talking about, dude, you're going to get killed with how much you care about these fucking spirits. And you need to cut that emotion off. Yeah, turn that shit off and teach your body to move in a way that like allows for you to survive against these malicious spirits and throw away your emotion. And we really get an idea of like being a Hell Warden sucks.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of emotion-based character writing that really isn't seen in a lot of older shonen, but has seen a kind of surge in the newer series that have come out lately, primarily Demon Slayer. That is right now our most popular series out of Shonen Jump.
Yeah.
This series has been doing gangbusters. And it's so distinct from what Shonen Jump usually is.
Yeah.
It has a character who is trying to rebuild his life. He joins an organization to kill demons that are responsible for killing his family. But what drives him as a protagonist is the pity that he feels for these people that these, not just people, these demons who are stuck living the life of demons. And having a protagonist that is still a part of this organization of demon slayers and is still going to town, slaughtering their ranks, but does so in a way that is so empathetic and so radically kind. That's not something that we really have seen in Jump. And I think we're seeing a lot of it now because of Demon Slayer's success.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of those series that was one of the original series that kind of pulled from Demon Slayer more than anything else.
It's something that we're probably going to see a lot more of. And it's something that I appreciate most of all in terms of development for this media. Because we've gone through several manga that didn't really dive in too much of the characters or, you know, the baddies. And sometimes it was just, they're good, they're bad, let's have a fight.
For all intents and purposes, the day is saved! Akane, with no recollection of what just happened to her, shares a tender moment with Higuma. Afterwards, Ayaha shares a less tender moment as she proceeds to call Higuma out for hating his job as a hell warden. Higuma confesses to Ayaha's deduction. He hates having to be merciless of spirits who simply want to escape the tortures of hell, and confesses to only having the duty because his entire bloodline is sworn to it. When Ayaha tries to remind him of all the good that he's done as a hell warden, Higuma chalks up his conflicted feelings to having a weaker sense of justice. Regardless, Ayaha rewards Higuma's display of vulnerability by committing to her role as a pillar of support, and after the pep talk, the two move onwards to the last arc of the series. I like Ayaha as a character.
Yeah.
I am so upset that she's stuck as just the best character with, like, the worst powers.
But she has the nice moment here where she's paying attention. She's cognizant enough to call Higuma on what's going on immediately and doesn't beat around the bush. She goes straight for the jugular on that one. And then, you know, like you said, rewards him for being vulnerable and talking about something that is not easy to talk about.
That's nice.
Yeah, that's super great. Like, we need more of that in real life.
I am personally a huge fan of having more media for young adults or young children that, you know, do confront hard questions like that. I very much like the Adventure Time shift of have more emotion and have more vulnerability in your characters and show that as something that's a common occurrence in the cartoon world and also the real world.
And one of those examples I would also think of would be Steven Universe, where the main character in this one has to pretty much fix a lot of things that are wrong that were left for them.
Oh, shit. Hold on now. is this shit just weeb Steven Universe? A young man that's very chipper but non-confrontational is being tasked to be a part of a troop of heroes set to save the world, and he's forced into this position due to the decisions of his elders.
That's pretty close. That's pretty on point.
It's not that gay, though, so yeah. we can cut. Ain't the kind of gay.
It could have been more gay. I would have been super cool for that, but, you know.
Yeah, because we even have the crying down, so we just needed the gay and the singing, and we're all set.
Yeah.
This leads us to the final arc of the series, the Molten Arc. Chapters 12 through 19. While hanging out at the temple one night, Ayaha finds a photo album and learns about Higuma's father and aunt, a pair of hell wardens who were killed by the same spirit 6 years ago. Coincidentally enough, as Higuma walks Ayaha back home, who else would our heroes happen to run into but that very same fugitive spirit? The spirit responsible for the death of every hell warden of the Kagarite line, with an 879-year sentence in hell. The big bad of the series, Shakafutsu Akagane, the Molten. They introduce the idea of who a big bad in the series is, and then they immediately fight the big bad of the series.
Yeah.
And we gotta hurry up and kind of get to the fights that I really wanted to write about, when I came up with this series because I only have 7 chapters left.
Yeah, I'm getting canceled. I need to wrap this up.
With his ability to manipulate molten copper that flows through his body, the spirit immediately melts off Higuma's left arm as he attempts to protect Ayaha. Luckily, Ayaha is able to teleport back to the temple, just in time to miss out on the beating Higuma takes against his clan's murderer. And speaking of Higuma's clan, what better time than in the middle of a climactic fight of the series to transition into a flashback? We haven't done... Listen, I said we'd be getting a lot of these, and we get a lot of flashbacks with these canceled series, but we haven't gotten flashback arcs.
Yeah.
And I apologize for the deception of those earlier chapters, or earlier episodes, but this is a proper, like, this, ooh, yeah. Let's get a flashback arc in the end of the series. Hell yeah.
This is the first flashback arc we've had since Neolation.
This is literally our first one. Episode.
Yeah.
We go back in time to over 6 years ago to when Higuma was just a toddler being raised by his father, Asuma, and his aunt, Haruma. We learn that even as a toddler, Higuma had no stomach for violence whatsoever. Something that worries the two sibling Hell Wardens as they cope with how they are going to prepare the boy for when it's his turn to wear the uniform. For Asuma, the challenge is to enforce tough love on a boy who might be losing his father soon, as he expects the molten spirit to soon come and take his life and his sister's life, as he has done with every other Hell Warden in this clan. If you have to know why he's doing that, he's just an asshole.
Yeah,
he's just a dick, and he just hates these guys. Haruma, on the other hand, has another plan. While conspiring with a powerful fugitive spirit known as Kyuri Engetsu, Haruma focuses her efforts on killing King Enma, thus freeing her family's generational servitude to the ruler of hell. Bold.
Yeah, I mean, oh my god.
Although little does Haruma know that the spirit she's partnered with has been clouding her judgment and manipulating her emotions with a special ability. Fucking asshole, man!
That's cheap.
That's cheating! That's not even... Because I actually like the idea of this character who was like, holy shit, fucking being a fucking hell warden!
Yeah.
Kill King Enma! And the fact that we later learn, like, oh no, she's just being mind controlled kind of eats away at that. Because even if King Enma does straight up murder her as punishment or something, it's like... She was done in by a demon.
Yeah.
Right? She was controlled by a demon and her death is led by a demon. It's not led by King Enma being like, oh, you motherfucker, and just laying the ban hammer down.
You know, we also learned that King Enma, as we see as the child, that is just the only way that they can be perceived by us humans when we're in there. And that King Enma is an entity that is the prison.
That's right. King Enma's the bridge in the misty fog the whole time.
Yeah. So it's like, your plan is to kill hell. All right. Okay. It's sentient?
Yes. Yeah, it's fucking metal as shit.
That is super metal. I love like that is pretty cool.
On the night of the conspiracy, Haruma informs her brother on the plan to kill King Enma. Plans that Asuma rejects outright. Asuma tries to talk sense into his sister, but that lecture gets interrupted when a molten spear pierces Haruma through the back, right in front of Higuma.
Uh-oh.
Fucking molten dick.
What an asshole.
Against the wishes of Kuyuri Engetsu, the molten spirit begins its attack on the temple. As the siblings struggle against their clan's murderer, they reflect on what had driven them to stay committed to King Enma and gain strength as Hell Wardens. And that is the opportunity to take revenge. Unfortunately, it's not enough. The only consolation for their defeat are the last words that Haruma shares with Higuma. After killing his family, the molten spirit makes his plans for Higuma clear, to leave him alive so that the spirit may kill him for fun later. And suddenly we find ourselves back to the present. Again, molten spirit, what a fucking cop.
Yeah, he's a huge dick.
I'm just king fucking asshole. Just
also fuck this family everyone. In particular.
Also, fuck this one family in particular. True, though.
This is the perfect time where they could have given Ayaha the ability of a warden or something to come in and help kick ass, because that's where I thought it was going. I thought they were going to, when I read this flashback, I thought they were going to have a thing like, oh, she's back, and now she has this, you know, something, the drive to create power from that drive and is able to do something, you know. Because King Enma was like, oh, wow, look at their drive and how much they love this person, you know, and their dedication to justice. Now they have a little bit of power to help him. But no, that actually doesn't happen. Not at all.
No, it would have been cool if, like, her mind gets taken to Enma's realm and she says, "What the fuck? You're an asshole for forcing this kid onto this job. What the fuck is your problem?" And King Enma could be like, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" And she's like, "Give me the job and I'll help the motherfucker out."
Yeah.
Like,
that would have been way more interesting.
As he toys with Higuma, the molten spirit mocks him for being yet another failed tale of revenge. But Higuma corrects the spirit. "This isn't about revenge," he proclaims. "This is just our job." Entertained by the Hell Warden's sentiment, the molten spirit pulls back his attack and lays out his new goal as he makes his escape, to cause so much suffering in the young man's life that he'll abandon his duty and send himself to hell. With two chapters left, we're introduced to a bunch of new characters during the post-fight cleanup. This includes a fugitive spirit who sets up a power conflict that doesn't go anywhere, and a pair of Hell Wardens who remind me of the blonde Vocaloid siblings, but dressed in World War II cosplay. Ren and Lin, right?
Right.
And it's like, dude, we got two chapters left. Who the hell are I don't give a shit about
these. Yeah,
it's these.
Like, who are these people? Why?
Eventually, we are treated to one more conversation between Higuma and King Enma. A lot of unused plot details get described in the final chapter, but in short, Higuma commits to a plan that will free him from being a Hell Warden, and that is to capture the spirits responsible for unleashing the prisoners of Hell onto the mortal world 400 years ago, otherwise known as the Old Man. When King Enma asks if that means he'll stop feeling sorry for the fugitives, he refutes the assertion, saying that running away isn't an option if all roads lead to suffering anyway. The only way to go is forward, and luckily he has a group of friends who will have his back on this journey. When he returns to the world of the living, he's greeted by those very friends as they all begin to work out a plan to attack a stronghold of fugitive spirits that might lead to the capture of the old man, maybe, whatever, we don't care. Wasting no time, our heroes get back to work, and thus ends Hell Warden Higuma.
Though, are we going to mention the, like, epilogue chapter?
Holy shit, I didn't even write it down, so I don't even know what happens.
I mean, it's not even worth it. It's just like...
You get to describe a chapter. What happens in the epilogue chapter?
No, I can absolutely do that. So, you know, way back when, like, Ayama talks about, oh, I want to, you know, go to the fireworks, you know, all that kind of stuff. So they do. They go to the fireworks, and then they meet one of the minor villains we saw for a hot second. And then there's, like, a dragon, and they interrupt the fireworks festival. Oh, no. And then they kill it, and then it's all good.
Hellworn Higuma concludes with just basically us getting to Act 1 and having our characters have the resolve to reach a big end that we never get to see.
Yeah.
Not the first time this happened with a canceled series.
Yeah, seems to be on par.
Alex, what'd you think?
For the series as a whole, I rather enjoyed it. There is a lot of things that really worked. There's, like you said, a lot of moments that shine really well. If this came by itself, like if I try to stack this up next to, you know, Neolation, Tokyo Shinobi Squad, Zip Man, this one's better than all those. It has a lot more going for it than all those. But I feel like because we have to think of when it came out too, it's going to get overshadowed by something that did this, but better.
If this was a series that came out in like early 2000s and was a different action series from the big three, I would love it because it's such an original idea of what Shonen can be for that time period. And the action isn't, you know, it's not the best, but it works. The powers are cool. The characters are interesting and whatnot. And I think in an earlier jump, this would have been a really, really good series to read. I think the quality for character writing and for world building has jumped up exponentially. Even in 2017, when the series was trying to compete, it's kind of doing what a lot of other series do already, but lesser, I guess, in a lot of ways. It's an interesting read if you are a fan of Demon Slayer. If you're looking for more interesting character writing in your shonen action, this isn't really something that gets boring to read. It does the job it needs to, and it leads to a greater discussion in terms of how 2017 and 2016 and even to now has kind of changed what kind of heroes we see in Shonen Jump. Alex, I'll ask you, is the shift from kind of the himbo, I have all the power in the world characters into the more I'm trapped in a shitty situation, but I'm doing the best I can. Do you think that's reflective of the kind of changing zeitgeist of, we have global warming coming up, we have class divide, we have a lot of instability that is, I think, worrying even for young people. And I think that influences what kind of tropes we see in stories.
Not only does the situations in terms of what's going on socioeconomically, politically, and things just in the world in general affects how we write stories, it always has, whether it's stories, music, you know, whatever. It changes genres entirely. This generation is now more aware of things, more aware of how do we talk to people, how do we communicate with people, being a bit more compassionate about how someone identifies or where they come from, or thinking of like someone's acting out in a certain way and not just be like, well, you know, fuck them, they're just acting out. That level of like empathy that is being shown with these newer, younger generations, we have protagonists that are gonna meet that kind of thing, right? Right. And I think that's where we see with, you know, Hellwarden and with Demon Slayer, it's sort of life influences art, but also art influences life as well.
I ask you this because I don't have stats on me. I don't have a survey that will completely validate the assertion that the young people of right now, your Zoomers and younger millennials, they have a more cynical understanding of their prospects than young people of past generations. I don't have those numbers for Japanese youths or American youths or anything like that. But I want to work under that assumption because in my experience, that's a very common feeling. And I think you could see that transition in Shonen Jump more than you can see it in almost any other youth-targeted media. We're talking about a publication that went from himbo characters that their expression of freedom, and that's what Shonen Jump is the glorification of freedom, of power, and being able to do what makes you feel happy and right in this world. That's what most youth media is having the freedom to accomplish your goals. That's what Dragon Ball is. That's what, like, Naruto is and whatnot. Nobody in Dragon Ball is trapped. Nobody in Bleach is trapped by anything. These are just super uber powerful people that accomplish their goals without any kind of concern for what the future might hold. I think series like Demon Slayer, I think series like Chainsaw Man, I think series like Hellwarden Higuma are more in keeping with what the current youth zeitgeist is, which is, even if we're trapped in a world that is against us or trapped in a society that doesn't understand us, we have the freedom to be better. We have the freedom to be kinder, to be more forgiving, to have more empathy towards people, and to find the strength that comes from that freedom of not letting a hateful world make you hateful.
Ooh, yes. I like that quite a bit.
So I think Hellborn Higuma had a lot of that, but, you know, this was only 2 years into Demon Slayer. This is still a kind of understanding of youth protagonists that isn't exactly prevalent everywhere. But I think it had the right idea on what we could expect out of Shonen Jump. And I think if you look at most of the new series that get picked up, Hellwarden Higuma is so close to joining that kind of pantheon of emotionally mature protagonists that would have made this a good series. It's just there are some fundamental things in terms of how the, you know, the pacing is a little too wonky, how the story felt too much like, you know, we're reaching point A, point B, point C. It's a shame because I think the overall theme that the mangaka wanted to tell has a lot of value. What did they give Neolation? Did I give Neolation a 6 or a 7?
Oh gosh, I don't remember.
I think I gave it a 6 because I went back in time to rectify that I gave it a 7.
Oh yeah, you did.
I needed to drop it down to 6. I would say it is as decent of a read as Annihilation. No, it's better than Annihilation. It's a 7. It's better than Annihilation. It's a 7.
Okay, that's where I'm going to put it too.
Yeah, you say 7 too. Yeah. There is something to take from this that I wish more series did. It is the best side character I've read in a really long time. It's just that she keeps getting put in like shitty plot points. But overall, fun read, cool powers, and I think it has kind of the roots of what current Shonen Jump is succeeding with that gives you an idea of what had to fail in order for those things to succeed. So pretty good read.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to agree with this point by point, really. I'm also going to give it a 7. have you finished all your weekly reading and kind of want something else? Yeah, pick this up. Read through it. Take a couple hours, read through it. I think there's not a whole lot about it that's going to make it stand out. This isn't something like Time Paradox Ghost Rider or... Mm-hmm.
It's not unforgettable.
Yeah, it's not unforgettable. But overall, I had a great time. I really enjoyed this one. I enjoyed talking about this one too.
Thank you for tuning in to the Shonen Fiasco show. I hope you had a good time listening in. We are on Twitter at Shonen Fiasco. And you can also listen to us wherever you hear your podcasts, your Spotify's, your iTunes, your Amazon radios. We are looking to set up the YouTube channel and a few other projects in the works in the future. We shall see.
The music for this episode's pitch is brought to you by The Game Brass. We are a brass quintet that plays video game music.
Ooh. Give them a listen.
Sorry, interjection there. Yes.
Give us a listen. I got you. I saved you on your... Yeah. You got the indigestion.
Yeah,
I
it just like hit me. It's like,
it's like, no, I have you, my friend. next episode. Alex, do you like robots?
I love robots.
Do you like cool, weird powers?
I love that too.
Do you like dragons?
I love dragons!
Next episode, we are going to be reviewing Stealth Symphony from the writer of Durarara and Bakano.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear.
It's your Christmas present, so yes. Congratulations. Thank you for being a good boy.
Oh, awesome. I'm glad it's not Cole.
We'll read Cole next episode after that. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Shonen Fiasco show. I am Adam Tetramore.
And I am Alex Hill.
Be sure to read everything.
I smell your old people life juice.
Oh, no! Slurp noises!